Midtown got its hustlers, the Bowery got its bums, 42nd Street got Big Jim Walker, he a bull shooting son of a gun. Yeah, he big and dumb as a man can come, but he's stronger than a country horse. And when the bad folks all get together at night, you know they all call Big Jim Ball just because.
Ladies and gentlemen, look up in the sky. It's a bird.
There?
It's a plane. It's
Hitchcock. I still don't see it.
Yeah, I know. It's gone now. And you had the opportunity. You were dicking around and you missed your opportunity.
There? I did.
The sun was in your eyes and hey everybody.
A cloud.
As always, I'm Andrew Farmer. With me is the Jedi Cole Houston.
Hello.
There he is. And tonight we bring you issue 121 of Hey Kids Comics, an issue that I think has been in Cole's mind for longer than he knew it was in his mind, because this is a topic that comes up.
It's really an inception kind of thing.
This topic comes up a lot between us, and Cole brought the idea to the table. It's a really great idea. Cole, what are we talking about tonight?
Well, tonight we want to talk about a phenomenon that began in, I think, like 1936, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
Somewhere along those lines. So 1933, I believe.
Wow.
Was at least where the genesis.
I was 30 years old.
the genesis of this was in 1933, though I think the actual thing itself was also in 1933. What started out as from a short story published by a couple of guys in a fanzine, then later got completely retooled from some sort of bald-headed, evil, maniacal, wannabe world tyrant with some kind of psychic powers or something.
Right,
like
some Nazi super soldier.
Yeah, that was going to take over the world. These telepathic powers, and it was a story called The Reign of the Superman. And then I guess somewhere a little later on they thought, you know, that's a neato idea, but you know what would be better? And this would probably sell.
Right.
And we'd get none of the money out of it.
Ever, for the next 80 years.
Until we're long dead and our relatives finally get something out of it. And though they didn't know that at the time, which
right.
If they'd been telepathic like the Reign of the Superman, they would have got this. And that is, of course, Superman. And the phenomenon isn't so much that Superman kind of launched a new era in comic books, which prior to that were often, like the romance novels,
yes,
for young people.
True crime novels, yeah.
Funny animals.
The true crime funny animals genre was the one
I really
liked.
That was the most unusual.
certainly was.
Yeah, Mike Hammerhead.
Nice!
Detective.
Nice!
One of my personal favorites from that era.
Nice!
Would go around in this sort of noir, black and white undersea environment, and you know, someone did shot a grouper. And he would try to piece together all the clues. And,
I'm a huge fan of Mike Hammerhead now.
Very popular book in its day, in the rare funny animal crime genre.
I can't be happier with Mike Hammerhead. The idea of Mike Hammerhead, I really can't.
Yeah, let's see if we can find some of the original Mike Hammerheads to showcase one of these days. But it's not so much that Superman gave National Periodicals Publications, aka DC Comics, the idea to say, "Hey, why don't we do another book like this? Because it's kind of popular with the kids," and that gave us Batman in the pages of Detective, and that then would give us the Justice League, and
right?
Would give us the Spider-Man. Captain America, and give us, God help us all, it would eventually give us the Max or Gen 13. All of these things would come from that. But
give us the. If you could go back in time and do anything, a lot of people say they would kill Hitler.
Yeah, I think stopping the Max from ever being published?
I think you know, you have to go to the source, though. I mean, did enough good come out of comic books that you wouldn't want to stop comic books from coming out just so Rob Liefeld wouldn't be able to make comic books?
That's a tough question, because, I mean, think of all the things we would miss otherwise, but are all those things worth it? Are the Watchmans and the Killing Jokes and the, what is the one with the really great indie that you had brought up, Saga, you know, are these worth allowing
Rob Liefeld to exist?
Yeah, Rob Liefeld to exist.
Here's what I would do. And I know this is off topic, but if I could do anything, if I could go back in time, let's say that you have the 100 bullets scenario, the comic 100 bullets, where you have a gun and 100 untraceable bullets. You use those bullets, you will never be tracked, you will never be found. Which, by the way, if you haven't read 100 Bullets, people out there, go read 100 Bullets. It is a crime book, but it is fantastic.
It's based on one of the Mike Hammerheads.
It is. 100 Bull Sharks. It took me way too long to get there, but I knew it was there. I would go back in time and give that briefcase to Jim Stranko and just tell him to do whatever he wanted with it. Just do it.
Do your bidding.
Just let me watch what happens.
But the thing about it was that it wasn't so much that this fathered, as it were, a genre.
Mm-hmm.
So much as it inadvertently, in that sort of the law of unintended consequences, created its own kind of little monster, and that is the most sincere form of flattery. Imitation has been the order of the day pretty much almost from the outset, and that is the purpose of this issue is to discuss the oft overly imitated Superman.
Yes, because
Superman has been imitated not only by other publishers, but even by DC themselves. Because it becomes the ultimate analog. Superman is the ultimate hero, and therefore, you know, it's everybody wants to be Superman or have their own Superman. And sometimes it's more of a, you know, a tribute kind of thing, like trying to tell a new version of Superman without it being published by DC. Sometimes it's just flat-out rip-off.
You know what's interesting is, since the invention of Superman, since we were talking about pretty much right away, it created not only a character that has existed for 80-plus years, it created an archetype, that, like a void that needs to be filled in every comic universe that you'll ever have.
Yeah.
So DC creates Superman, Superman exists. All of a sudden, anything that comes after it will have to have a Superman, because that Superman is integral to telling a certain story that has become synonymous with the idea of comic books. So
that's a good point. Yeah. You eventually you're going to have to tell that story or something akin to it.
Right, you have to have that character to tell those. And what's funny is you start seeing that kind of role in everything. I think we had talked about it during our Gods,
yes,
overarching,
surely.
where you all of a sudden have to have a Batman character. You have to have a Captain America type character. Once Captain America was introduced, you have to have a Wonder Woman type character. You know, all of these characters now have to exist to tell a certain story within your universe. So even in your universe, I'm sure you had a Superman analog.
In fact, we had several.
Well, and that's the other thing, is one isn't enough, ever.
Yeah, the thing about it is when Steve and I were trying to, like, create our own sort of stuff, that was one of the things. I was not a big Superman fan, and I think Steve was a big enough Superman fan that there was tremendous reverence to the character.
Yes.
So we really tried to avoid having that sort of character.
Okay.
And it wasn't until we started, like, turning our eye toward filling in some blanks and having some backstory that we felt kind of, without really consciously overthinking it or anything, but we felt more comfortable about introducing that analog in the context of a kind of a World War II era storylines, we wanted to give some background to our universe and let it have its 40s and
right.
those types of characters and that type of sensibility. So we had a character that was sort of a Superman analog, but there were some other unique factors to it that were inspired by other things or uniquely our own.
That's awesome.
But yeah, you're right. You can't help it. You have to. You eventually go to that well because the sweetest water is there.
Yeah, it's the sweetest water. It's the fountain of youth, really. It's a Cortez's fountain of youth. The curious thing for me is, you know, you have, and we'll go through. I mean, the list is insane of your Superman proxies in every universe, and like you said, in the same universe. That's probably one of the most interesting things about this is, let's say you're DC, you've got Superman, but all of a sudden you've invented all of these worlds, at least 52, sometimes more. And every one of those worlds is going to have a Superman on it. So you can all of a sudden tell stories outside of your normal Superman. Like you can tell your Elseworld Superman stories. You can tell your Red Sun Supermans. And you can tell your, you know, 19, you know, your, all you know, all these Superman stories, the vampire Superman, or Superman that's powered by, you know, butts, pig butts, and
yeah.
You know, whatever you want, you can tell that story within the DC universe. So you don't just have Superman anymore.
It took a while for them to fully embrace that, and I think it was, you know, once you had the Elseworlds imprint.
Yeah.
When it was open season on the variation of how do you tell the same story in a different way. And ultimately, it's just all about, well, you know, what would happen if Superman hadn't landed in rural America?
Right.
And that's a compelling tale, potentially. Sometimes it's done very well, sometimes it's done very poorly, because it's also a story that's easy to tell without putting much effort into it. You know, you just, oh, here it is, there you go.
Yeah, like, oh, what happens if he lands in Russia, or if he lands in Nazi Germany, or if you could every what-if imaginable that we've all done, you know,
yeah.
You can do. So as far as this goes, what are some that immediately that come to your mind as the Superman analog?
Absolutely. Oddly enough, I think one of the foremost is because it suffers from being the only one that DC cared enough, and I was always curious about this, why did Captain Marvel, a.k.a. Shazam,
yes.
How did Fawcett get so heavily on the radar of DC when in the years presumably before, but certainly after, everybody and their grandmother, even fanboys like me, had a Superman analog. Sometimes so blatantly a Superman analog as to be a just, you know, waving your ass in their face ripoff. Why did they go after Fawcett? And I got really curious about that one day, and this is probably, you know, one of those times when this had floated to the top of my thoughts, and then I flat forgot about it again, and we're just now getting to this topic. And what it turned out to be, oddly enough, and I was completely unaware of this, Fawcett, Captain Marvel, did the unthinkable.
Yeah.
Outsold Superman.
Wow.
There was a period of about 2 or 3 years, and I believe the 30s, where Captain Marvel was outselling Superman. Well, that's you can't sit for that.
No. That is a gauntlet being thrown.
It's just flying in the face. You know, you can be Superman like, but that doesn't, you know, who's going to read a Superman ripoff? Well, apparently a hell of a lot of people. That just won't stand. So basically, Fawcett was sued, and ultimately lost not only the lawsuit, but lost the character. As part of the settlement, DC took on ownership of the character. And then it becomes a sort of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where you buy the red line to dismantle it so you can make your fortune on the highways that are being built.
Sort of right.
Like just some sort of Judge Doom there. Long way to go for an analog. But then you'll find as we delve into this, a lot of people went a long way for Superman analogs.
Right. Well, I mean, they did, but you know, the interesting thing about it was the stories that people start telling then, like, because I know one of your favorites, and I know that you're going to tell the story, so we might as well. I kind of want you to regale us. Is the the Marvel's Hyperion?
Yes, in fact, it was printed under their Epic imprint. Is it or? Now I'm drawing a blank. No, their Max imprint, Marvel Max imprint, and what it did, it was their Supreme Power, which. This is one of the things that always bothered me, is the character of Hyperion was such a blatant Superman ripoff, top to bottom. It was just like, guess what? We're going to have a Marvel Superman. And we're not, you know, we're going to come shy of calling him Man-Super. you know, we're just going to blatantly have this strange visitor from another planet with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men.
Right.
And DC, you can suck it. And DC did. I mean, they just, they lived with it. I think that was what bothered me, because Hyperion was more like Superman than Superman, and certainly a hell of a lot more like Superman than Shazam and Captain Marvel. So how is it that Captain Marvel get sued out of existence, or at least sued out of ownership?
Right.
And Hyperion gets to continually appear with impunity. And the reason is that nobody was buying so many copies of anything Hyperion appeared in that it threatened them in any way.
Right.
It wasn't worth it. Yeah, have fun with your little Superman analog. Who cares? Because, you know, they'll appear in the Avengers from time to time. You might give them a miniseries that rapidly begins to make no damn sense at all. And that's that. So, fast forward years later, we take Hyperion out of the yellow and red, where he looks like a condiment caddy, and
a condiment caddy.
You can just imagine this little like thing that looks like a miniature picnic table with the two little spout bottles in it. That's pretty much what his costume looked like, and. Your bright reds and your bright yellows. So basically, you know, you take that away. You give him a more sensible-looking costume that someone might design for a movie. You take the idea of the Squadron Supreme, which was a blatant Justice League ripoff top to bottom. And then you you tell a sensible story with them, up to a point.
Yeah.
This was J. Michael Straczynski, at one of those periods where he was at the height of his powers. And at intervals, it tells a very compelling story. Some of the characters he just didn't know what to do with, I think. And you can tell.
Right, right.
But at the end of the day, what he did with Superman in the first few issues of that series was tell the best Superman story ever told, because you have the interstellar vessel arriving and, you know, plummeting to Earth. You have your hayseed young couple discover and bring back the pod and the child. And then things get a little more modern. Because you're not telling a naive 30s story anymore. And you're not in Kansas anymore, because all of a sudden the government black ops team shows up to promptly confiscate whatever it is that has fallen to Earth. And, you know, promptly inform you that this never happened.
Right.
And then they disappear the child away to be raised in the American way.
By
much
the government.
More stringent, yeah. Much more stringent and controlled conditions than Ma and Pa Kent ever could have imagined. I mean, they instilled young Clark with some amazing values, but they weren't necessarily the toe-the-line, you know, North Korea-level blind ideology that you would want in a superhuman.
Right.
And there's some really amazing stuff done with that, especially from the standpoint of his adopted parents who are essentially government agents.
Right. That are just, so, yeah. But, you know, the thing that's really interesting is when you start talking about all of the analogs for Superman, you know, you've got you've got guys like you said, you've got Hyperion, you've got Supreme, you've got the guy from Irredeemable. Oh, the Plutonian is what they called him. You know, you've got Omni-Man and all the ones that you think about.
Icon and
Right, Apollo. All of these guys that are the fairly popular versions. And I'm not talking about Captain Marvel, because the funny thing about Captain Marvel is there are knockoffs of Captain Marvel.
Exactly.
Who is a knockoff of Superman. But,
well, what's odd is, you know, like I was saying, he's less of a knockoff than so many others, yet he's the perfect target to be knocked off himself.
Because you've got, when I was doing the research for this, I had forgotten about a particular character, and that was Prime. Prime from the Malibu universe.
Yes.
Prime is a knockoff of Captain Marvel, who in turn is a knockoff of Superman. I'm like, so anybody who has the Swiss Army powers at this point, you know, is kind of a, but is that they've been done so much that you're starting to see, and you started to see in the 90s and in the 80s, the same stories being retold with the knockoffs. You know, the absolute power corrupts absolutely. What happens if Superman was a bad guy? You know, what happens if Superman left? What happens if Superman...
Well, it's almost like these analogs have allowed an endless stream of Elseworlds that aren't published by DC.
Right.
Because others are taking on that role.
Exactly.
Regardless of, you know, which character. And both Superman and Captain Marvel, I'm glad you kind of brought that up, because that does lead nicely into a novel, which I was surprised to discover when I bothered to look into it, was originally published in 1977.
Wow.
And I first encountered it because it was, I think Diamond had offered it, and it was described as being the book that inspired Watchmen.
Okay.
I thought, oh, I've got to see this. If this inspired Alan Moore with Watchmen, I want to read these words. And what I found was it almost had, it was such a almost tongue-in-cheek or, you know, didn't take itself at all seriously type of thing, to the point where it was sort of like, okay, this is more, seems to me, an inspiration for, was it the Incredibles?
Right.
Than it would have been for Watchmen, because it does not have, except at very small intervals, any sort of the feel of the just down, you know, street level, gut level approach to the superhero genre. It's more a little tongue-in-cheek and fanciful at times, but what it did have was a principal character who was, you know, the last son of the planet Kronk. was vulnerable to Cronkite, and in addition to that little nod, his alter ego was David Brinkley, who's often associated with Walter Cronkite,
which is hilarious, by the way.
But there, I cannot remember what his what the hero's name was all of a sudden. But, you know, this particular character, there was also a character that they go and try to track down that was called Captain Mantra. It was your Shazam analog.
Nice.
So there you had this, you know, unique kind of approach to telling the story. Everybody, you know, you have to have your Superman character, and this was somebody else's sort of take on the story of the Superman. If you can track one down, it's a fun read, but do not do like what I did and go into it thinking this was in any way that big an inspiration to Watchmen.
Right.
The only thing I can think of is that, you know, it inspired them to take the opposite tack. In fact, I can't remember. They may not have even had a proper superhero name for him. I can't recall, but poor David Brinkley was. Oh, that's right. Yeah, occasionally is referred to as Indigo. but it's never established that that's necessarily the name he went by as a hero. But it's bizarre. It's aspects of it, I would say, are not for the kids.
Yeah.
Especially in some of Captain Mantra's backstory. But it's an unusual read, and it's something I think every comic fan should eventually check out, because it has that sort of unique place in comic history.
You know, there's one Superman analog that's really interesting, because Marvel has had its fair share of Superman. And the one that we've talked about it in the past, and I don't really get it, I guess, like I can see where it's coming from, but I don't understand why, is Gladiator of the Shire.
Imperial Guard of Shire. Yeah. Of the Shire.
Of the Shire, yeah. He's definitely of the Shire.
I think there was one where he had his boots off and he had big hairy feet. So
he did.
That was pretty much the giveaway at that point.
So what is the deal there? Because I try to figure it out. Like I've read it. Obviously, I know who the character
Gladiator
is.
Gladiator is an analog to Superman in the sense that Superman is being advanced into the mythos of, you're basically taking, instead of having a Superboy, you have a Superman, because the Imperial Guard of Shi'ar, in much the same way that Hyperion and the Squadron Supreme were a character-for-character ripoff of the Justice League, the Imperial Guard of Shi'ar was a blatant character-for-character ripoff of the Legion of Superheroes. And if you go and look in who's in Marvel Universe, if you look at the group page, you can go, oh, well, obviously, you know, Smasher is Mon-El, or, Titan is Colossal
really?
Boy.
Okay. That makes a lot more sense. Okay.
Yeah, this guy here is Chameleon Boy. You have a very blatant... In that context, if you have to kind of, like I say, advance Superboy to Superman. So it's more like Superman and the Legion of Superheroes than it is Superboy in the Legion of Superheroes.
You know what's funny is it never dawned on me that they were Legion, that it was the Legion and not the Justice League, because I was constantly trying to look
you're trying to pry bar that.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, even up to the point at one that they eventually would add a Skrull shape, the Skrull shapeshifter, as an analog to it was in the Squadron Supreme, would eventually have a Skrull join the cast as an analog to Martian Manhunter.
Really? Okay. This makes sense now. I'm on board now. Okay.
Yeah.
I never made
when you
that
look at it that way, then he's a Superman analog, but a younger version of himself would not work in that context.
Right.
You know, you wouldn't see the Imperial Guard of Shi'ar being led by some kid, even though it would make it even more obvious what's going on there. But yeah, that is where you're getting the Gladiator.
Yes, okay. That makes total sense now. That's good.
This helped.
It did. It really helped me to come to terms with where I'm at. Now, one of the most interesting ones for me, and I this isn't the first time I've researched it. I researched it before because it looked weird to me, was the introduction of the Blue Marvel in Marvel. The Blue Marvel was a way for Marvel Comics to tell a story, a Superman story that I don't think had been told before. They found one that hadn't been told. And it was the story of a in the 60s. It was based in the 60s, and it was a Superman that wore a full face mask and a blue outfit. And he had pretty much all of the Superman powers. So all the things that he did were, you know, he had the strength and the reflexes and the flight and the invulnerability and the energy manipulation. And what happened was he stopped a terrorist attack or something like that, and he went to accept the Presidential Medal of Honor, but his face was like the mask was destroyed, so everybody in the audience saw that he was a black guy in the 60s, and everybody freaked out. So they freaked out on the guy that just saved America from a giant like terrorist attack because he was black, yeah. and then he gave up the superhero game and fled to the blue side of the moon and hung out with the Watcher for a while and did stuff like that because they couldn't accept a black Superman. So it was telling a really interesting story about racism and acceptance and how you deal with that kind of thing. And I had never,
but also the way. Full disclosure can change, can literally color an opinion.
Not to be too literal, but in fact,
when I was in college, I had one of the essays that I wrote for one of the assignments. It was talking about how that, to illustrate that same sort of idea, I talked about if you had a celebrated artist who created these amazing works with this subtlety of depth and color and texture and form. And after, years of celebration, finally revealing his technique that he'd gone to the zoo for years and collected rhinoceros dung that he would then shape and form and coat with various materials and give it a shine and all this stuff. How does that change the art? Is it less than what it was because you suddenly now know that it was rhino shit?
Right.
Because it was all, the thing about it is, when you allow yourself to be, have your opinion changed by such revelations, it undermines the fact that it was always that way, that you didn't know shouldn't, it's like finding out something you don't like was an ingredient in something that you enjoyed.
But it's
and all of a sudden you hate it.
Right. It's also that idea that, we've talked about at length, that the power of the alter ego, the power of keeping your identity hidden, is really important as well. So that for me, it was a story that worked on a bunch, and it was well written.
That's nice, yeah.
Yeah, it was actually very well written. It was in a mini series. You can pick it up in collected form. But it was a really cool idea. So I've got, we've talked about Hyperion, which you've talked about on the show.
Well, also this is also a good segue, as it were, into yet another character. Who was literally widely considered, by fandom as being sort of the Black Superman.
Oh, yes. Okay, good. Yeah.
That was the initial interpretation. That was from Milestone.
Yes.
Comics, the character Icon, which... I think it initially started out as Icon and Rocket. And Dwayne McDuffie, just beat his fist. No, it's not Black Superman. Finally just said, okay, it's Black Superman.
Yeah, it's Black
But the thing about it is that, to a degree, yes, it was. And to a degree, McDuffie was not, remiss in declaring as much.
Right.
But I think what most people missed in kind of caving to that larger reality is that Icon very much was the Superman analog. It very much was a Black Superman. But because McDuffie shrewdly teamed his Superman with, if you will, a youthful Ward in the form of Rocket, he takes on this kid from the streets and trains her to be kind of his sidekick and elevates her out of her circumstances into a larger world, into a more meaningful existence. And what you get is a Superman-Batman rolled into one.
Right.
Because Superman doesn't traditionally come equipped with a sidekick. Because frankly, Superman doesn't need a sidekick.
Yes.
He needs a sidekick about as much as he needs a utility belt.
It's true.
So, And that was an interesting approach, to take a character that doesn't need anyone, and realizing just because you don't need anyone doesn't mean somebody doesn't need you. And right. that changed everything. And in that sense, I feel that we do a great disservice at looking at Icon as Black Superman, because we miss out on the fact that it was Black Superman, Batman.
Right, it was Black Super Batman. It was
Super Batman.
That's right.
I mean, he literally...
Super Black Man, Batman.
He did something no one had ever really done before, and that's take the idea of going beyond what you need and, you know, basically fostering a new generation of hero to follow you.
Right.
Who doesn't have the benefit of coming from an alien world with powers and abilities beyond those of anybody else. So I think that's one of those things worth checking out, because, you know, it's one of those, you know, milestone stuff, often remanded of the quarter bins, worth a look.
Right, I agree. Oh man, so okay, who? So we've talked about some of the best, right? And you know what time it is? It's time to delve into some of the worst.
Oh, it's time to scrape the low barrel, as it were.
Yeah. So I want you to start this. What of them? Which ones do you view? Because we didn't talk about Samaritan, who was the. Did we talk about Samaritan?
No, we didn't. Samaritan. There's actually a couple of more that are really good analogs, and we should go ahead and just toss them out. There's not a tremendous amount behind them. Samaritan was a neat character in that he was Astro City's analog. I think there's another character that in lists winds up coming up from Astro City that I'm not familiar with. Must have been from later stuff. But Samaritan was definitely the big Superman analog, to the point where, you know, he worked as a reporter or worked in some capacity. And what was clever, what Busiek does with Samaritan, is he uses his alien technology I believe he was a reporter, to actually write all of his stuff. He doesn't have to, like, fly into the office and, you know, be super fast on the typewriter.
Yeah, right.
And get this story in at the last possible second, yet no one seems to notice he's never there, yet he turns in all
it
these
turns
stories.
It, yeah, right.
Almost, you know, you'd think that would beg the question of, is it like that disgraced journalist a few years ago that turned out he was just filing...
Glass or, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you'd think that that sort of scrutiny would eventually fall on him because he's never there, but and how come he's the only reporter who gets to do that?
You break his identity by some reporter in the, yeah.
Who's the one who gets bitched at about all the time? But the thing about it is, you with Samaritan, he was using his alien technology to literally write all the stories for him, to do the actual reporting work. So he had this analog, this algorithm in his super alien computer that would do all the writing, to the point of even deliberately putting in the requisite number of errors. it very specifically speaks to the fact that, you know, he's analyzed what his output should be, to the point that there would naturally, if there were no errors, it would seem odd.
Mm-hmm.
He's making himself look as human as possible, even if it's a machine doing all the work. And another one is Atom Man.
Okay.
Is from the raunchy pedophile sex club analog to the Justice League, who've apparently been sexually abusing their sidekicks for years, and that's all about to come out and leads to a bunch of murders and stuff that are investigated by the cops of Top Ten. Alan Moore's Top Ten is beyond fascinating, because the concept is that it's this... Part of the concept is there's, like, all these different parallel worlds that, I guess, recognize each other's existence.
Right.
And they're on the 10th parallel, for whatever that's meant to be. It's never adequately explored.
It's like another world, like a new 52 or a 52 world thing, maybe?
Yeah, sort of, in the sense that, you know, on the 10th parallel, every single person has some kind of superpower.
Okay.
So what it does is explore, in a existence like that, if everybody has superpowers, then your cops are just superpowered people who choose law enforcement over medicine or sales or
right.
any other filmmaking or whatever.
You're superpowered salesmen. You're...
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, you got like... And what it is, it's just chock-a-block full of characters that would never work anywhere else.
Right.
Got this guy, I don't know what his profession was. I think it was maybe a salesman or something. And but like everybody has superpowers, and they all have like superpower identities for the most part.
Yes.
Like the one guy is one character that is like a part of one of the stories, it's just sort of a bystander type character, affected character, is this character Andy Airbag Soames, who's this guy that just inflates up into a big ball. And that, but it's a, you know, it's a superpower, so obviously, but it's basically the story, top 10 is about the cops.
Okay.
In this precinct, in this district. And at one point, one of them actually goes to one of the other districts where everything's like Greco-Roman gods and monsters type of world.
Yeah.
And of course, the other fun thing about this is it's chock full of little visuals. Because it takes itself very seriously. I mean, there's one story that I cannot read, and I've read it 20 or 30 times without weeping.
Oh, man.
Openly. Because it's that well written and it's that touching. But at the same time, you know, in the background, there's like all kinds of shit going on, and you might see like the Hair Bear Bunch or some sort of thing that looks like a hideous rethinking of Thomas the Tank Engine. Or, you know, there's all kinds of little visuals. Or at one point, there's a hospital. You see these surgeons around a table, and one of them has four mechanical arms coming up. One of them has the gloves with the little Kirby dot, the little Ditko dots on them.
Yes.
It's got the big handlebar mustache going and a high collar. And, you know, one of them's got the, is just this floating scrubs with the helmet. so, you know, it's obvious the nods to various doctors. And Atom yes. Man is the Superman analog. And what's fascinating there is right down to the point of his species is vulnerable to different light waves.
Okay.
And at one point, they reveal he has this chamber with all of the different light waves, including the one that's deadly to him.
Okay.
So these specific light waves, and you know they've all got these blue light wave generating weapons when they're coming to arrest him, which I guess is the green kryptonite for him. But there's an interesting use of a character, this robot Joe Pye, who's from another parallel where everybody's artificial intelligence.
Okay.
And in their world, in the 10th parallel, robots are looked down upon. In fact, there's one character who's very derogatory to Joe Pye because he's highly prejudiced against what he calls the clickers.
The clickers.
And there's a wonderful scene where Joe Pye gets the better of him by, you know, being a better person, even though he's artificial intelligence.
Top 10 was a fantastic series,
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're looking for a unique parallel, there's one. You know, it's just part of a greater story, but very well utilized within that to the point where it's almost, he's a little creepy in some of the aspects of the way that their Justice League was portrayed.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because there's another book that was put out by Dynamite. Actually, Wildstorm put out the first round, but Dynamite put out the second round. And that was the book The Voice, which is a fairly similar idea. It's just way over the top, like like super over the top. And they're Superman, the idea of the superheroes that live in the universe in which the boys exist. And the boys is a story of an underground, almost vigilante, but not quite. They still work under the auspices of the police force. It's almost like if it was like the Shield or the Wire, but you know, it was up against a superhero, you know, superpowered beings instead of just crime families and drug dealers. And their whole thing was to keep tabs on the superheroes because all the superheroes in this world were the idea that everybody who has superpowers and everybody who has, you know, absolute power or any kind of power becomes corrupt very quickly and does, and while they are fighting crime against other superpowered beings on their off time, they like go on these hedonistic, weird, you know, like Club Med for pervy superheroes you know, that type of thing. So their Superman analog was very much the same way as it was in Top Ten, where, you know, I don't know if there, you know, it was weird, kinky, sexual stuff, and not any outright crime, but, you know, just like pervy, weird stuff, and they kept tabs on him and blackmailed him and things like that. So it's the same idea. So I guess that would be mine. All right, we're coming up on the 10-minute mark here.
Okay, yeah. And let's get out some of these bad ones, because in stalling a little bit, I've managed to conjure up probably the worst Superman analog ever, because it was just it was too over the top, too overdone, too, you know, deliberate in its, let's just see how far we can push this.
Okay.
And that would be from Tundra Publications, a spinoff of Rick Veitch from his King Hell imprint, spinoff of the Brat Pack, which itself was a little, little too over the top, deliberately. And this just, you know, took it far too much further, was the Maximortal.
Maximortal.
Yes. And the Maximortal was essentially the Brat Pack universe's Superman.
Okay.
And, you know, it's just, it got weird.
Okay.
I can't even really, it just got distasteful, I think you'd say it would be the best way to put that. And I really didn't follow it. I remember, you know, wanting to follow it, because I remember reading Brat Pack, and it was just, it was a little too over the top for my taste, but it was still fairly, it was enough well written.
Yeah.
That I was willing to forgive some of the things, where that was more like the extreme examples of the sidekick dynamic.
Okay, okay.
Which the sidekick dynamic is something we probably, we certainly will be talking about. We do have an upcoming episode somewhere down the line called Reckless Endangerment or something.
Yeah, we do. The worst parenting ever. Like.
Yes.
So there's one that I wanted to get to as we wrap things up, that I know is near and dear to your heart, and I don't have the experience that you have with it, but I still love the character. So, and that would be Marvel Man and or Miracle Man, depending on what universe you're existing in, and how, because the thing that they did was, they took all these stories that we're talking about, and Alan Moore, let's be honest, for the most part, Alan Moore did this, took a Superman, an analog for Superman, an homage to Superman, and made him probably the most interesting character in comic books for a long time, by telling stories that only Alan, and only the ways that Alan Moore could tell,
Well, what Alan Moore does in a lot of ways with that particular, with his tenure on that book, is do what I think Rick Veitch, however you pronounce his name, was attempting to do, because Alan Moore opened the floodgates in a way, and everybody in trying to be Watchmen or Miracle Man or V for Vendetta, etc., oftentimes didn't get it to the point where they took that concept and just went way beyond overboard. And what that does very successfully, what Moore does very successfully, is to take you up to a certain point.
Right.
And take you beyond what you know, beyond your normal comic book comfort levels, but not take you to the place where you just kind of want to go home.
Right, right. Because all in all, a lot of the things we're talking about is we have, you know, the like Irredeemable and Top Ten and Hyperion, and, you know, all these guys are, you know, the what happens if Superman goes off the rail story? What happens if Superman kind of decides that he is all-powerful and he should be king of the world, or he should be a god, or he just doesn't care anymore because humans are...
Yeah.
You know, all these stories. Miracle Man doesn't follow that chain. Miracle Man still tries, at its core, to be the superhero. It just deals with it, you know, because like you, when we were talking about Alan Moore's Green Lantern run, and you were talking about Cetaphil.
Yeah.
And what he did with that character. He approaches things from... you know, angles that no one had even thought about approaching things at. Like your story about what happens when Superman has to birth a baby. What happens, what happens when Superman, you know, it's those stories that are the most compelling, because those stories, what Alan Moore has done and what Alan Moore always does, and great writers, great comic book writers especially, but great writers, period, do is they take these extraordinary heroes and apply a story to them that it doesn't matter if they have superpowers or not. It's just a good story. We're going to explore the humanity that lives, that has to coexist with these superpowers. And, you know, like you were saying last week, Miracle Man has been re-released.
And there are things in there that are so very Alan Moore, like the, the part of the storyline is when they have him confronting the Dr. Savannah analog, Emil Gargunza, and Gargunza reveals that, you know, before they started experimenting on a human to utilize this alien technology that created him.
Right.
Naturally, you experiment on animals first. And so he literally has, you are introduced to literally Miracle Dog. But instead of just becoming a, you know, dog plus in the way that he's man plus.
Yes.
Miracle Dog is this hideous, you know, reptilian insect monster thing that then, you know, promptly is let off the chain after the now powerless human aspect of Miracle Man. So he is forced to try to, you know, to flee this thing and cannot become his superpowered alter ego to fight it, and ultimately manages to conjure up the keyword
and
back into a dog, which he promptly snaps its neck.
And an interesting thing about
that's
Superman.
The thing, you know, it's this cute little pocket pet, like, you know, Paris Hilton purse dog.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're confronted with, you know, your love of cute fuzzy puppy dogs and your love of breathing.
Exactly.
And, you know, it by doing this, Moore says, you know, sometimes you got to snap the neck of cute little puppy dogs
to survive.
Yeah. You can't let your enemy have that weapon back. You have to unload it.
Exactly. God damn it, Alan Moore. Damn it, Alan Moore. Like, he should get something. Like the, has
I
he
know,
gotten a,
like the Infinity Achievement Award?
Right.
It will only ever go to one person, living or dead. Ever.
You should get the
too bad for unborn writers who may surpass him.
He's got it. He ain't giving it up. Yeah. He should get the Nobel Prize for wrecking emotions. Like, if they make that prize, it should go to Alan Moore.
Anybody who, you know, can make me weep consistently every time I read the same damn story, and I go into it knowing
that it's there,
happen, and it still will bring tears to my eyes.
Like, every time I pick up a book by Alan Moore, especially a new one, one that I haven't read yet, like an issue of a comic, or, you know, a collected that I haven't read, I have to steel myself. I have to prepare myself for any emotional response. Because usually you can pick up a book like, oh, it's a Captain America book. I'm pretty sure I know what I'm going to get, but it's going to be fun. Alan Moore's like, oh, God, what am I getting myself into? I don't know.
How is he going to change my perception?
Right. How is he going to wreck me this
time?
This
character, this genre, this, you name it.
All right. Let's wrap this up. Let's wrap it up.
Yeah. In closing, I do want to point out that, you know, there are no shortage of Superman analogs.
Mm-mm.
But what was fascinating to me about the hit-and-miss nature of the Image book Wanted, which would then spawn a film that had nothing to do with it.
Right.
It
definitely didn't tell the same story.
Yeah. You know, Wanted, which was the first and only place you'd ever seen Spider-Man socks that allow you to walk on the wall. Which I thought was, you know, one of the hits. This was the first and only time I believe I've ever heard of there being a Bizarro analog.
Really? Okay.
And that has a Bizarro analog amidst the myriad villains who rule the world in the form of the character known simply as Fuckwit.
Nice. It's a brilliant name for
I know, it's just...
Perfect. It sums it all up. It wraps it right into one little...
But yeah, the thing that someone finally realized, why are we not playing on... Because what that character does is suggest a Superman analog that you just never see.
Right.
Because it's established they've killed off all the heroes. And in fact, they go searching in other dimensions so they can go find more heroes.
More heroes to kill, right.
So you have this impression that this was the Bizarro to some Superman you'll never see.
And last but not least, Captain Carrot.
Oh, yes, we did.
We got to get to Captain Carrot. Captain Carrot of the... What was the name of the...
Captain Carrot and his amazing zoo crew.
That's right.
Which, you know, you got to love a group with Pig Iron and... Yankee Poodle and Rubber Duck. Fastback, the Flash Analog Turtle.
So, yes.
Fuck it. It was odd. I didn't know what he was doing in that group.
Captain Carrot, who got his powers from eating carrots.
I think they should have had, though, he ate carrots. I think they should have had a Bizarro analog.
Go on.
Wild hair.
Oh, nice. Nice. That would have been awesome.
I think, you know, I'm putting that out there, because Captain Carrot apparently may be coming back.
Yeah, he's coming back in the multiversity convergence line, yes.
I pray and I hope that someone will pass this on to someone. We need Wild Hair.
We really, really do.
Wild Hair loves you.
He loves you, but Wild Hair loves carrots. Wild Hair
loves them. He absolutely is silly for carrots.
He's crazy. His eyesight is great.
Yeah.
All right, wrap it up. Let's wrap this up. Right. Wrap it up, B. Oh, you have been listening to Hey Kids Comics. We'll come back next week with another brand new issue. We are quickly approaching AllCon, which means our shows are going to become more and more AllCon-centric as the weeks progress up until mid-March. So prepare gird your loins for that inevitability, because
yes,
it is coming.
The annual assault will begin very soon, and we are presently... heavily embroiled in our AllCon preparations.
We really are.
If you are in Texas in mid-March, if you can at all make it, the JCU will have, as always, a tremendous presence there. I am personally, again, this year, probably involved in damn close to 10% of everything going on.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's my thing.
I mean, we've got a ton of game shows, all the Don't Lose Your Geek cards that you've come to know and love. Some new stuff coming that's under wraps right now. The return of the most popular Rookie of the Year last year, Screen Time, will be returning.
Screen Time is back. Mrs. Jedi Cole has some great stuff in the works. Lacey has some shows coming up.
Lacey has some shows. Onliners will return in a bigger, better fashion. It's going to be... insane. So if you're going to be in town and you got some time to blow, come. Even if you don't, make the time and come out.
That's right. So go visit www.cap-tx.info at the Convention Awareness Project Texas. You can get the dates and information. Click on the name of the show and take you right to their website.
What else we got going on, Cole?
Well, you can find us here at the Jedi Cole Universe, JediCole.com, and get the odd occasional tweets on Twitter, at the Jedi Cole U. Please feel free to write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. We have the grossly underutilized YouTube channel, the Jedi Cole Universe, but we're working on that. Especially around and after all kinds.
Oh, man, it's going to be sick.
A lot of stuff going on there. And also, you can find Andrew and myself on the second Saturday of every month on Hey Kids Comics Live on the...
Deep Ellum.
Yeah, deepellumonair.com. You can check out the archive on the website. Just to go to shows and scroll down to Hey Kids Comics Live. And also check out myself and Eddie Medina.
Yes.
Every other Sunday on the Rancor Pit Live, which is a spinoff of the Rancor Pit. So you get Rancor Pit every week. You get Hey Kids Comics every week. And Ranker Pit Live is every other Sunday. Hey Kids Comics Live, or Ranker Pit's 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Hey Kids Comics Live is the second Saturday of every month from 11:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. or 12:30 p.m. live streaming. And then, of course, the archive is available on their site, as well as Daily Motion and the Jedi Cult Universe.
There you go. Do you want to speak to your here at all?
Oh, yes. May as well, because we are fast approaching with the arrival of AllCon in mid-March, again, as a newly formed tradition will hold 4 weeks before the strip turns 2 years old.
It's insane.
Yeah, which is amazing to me. 104 cartoons later, you can get the next 52, not the new 52, mind you, but the next 52 cartoons of You Are Here in You're Still Here, You Are Here Volume 2, and we'll have plenty of Your First Year Here, You Are Here Volume 1 available at the table of the incredible Bobby Blakey, who is my artist on that series, as well as if you happen to track me down during the show, I'll have multiple copies with me and be happy to autograph for you as well.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, that's it. Join us next week for another edition of Hey Kids Comics. We're on issue 122 next week. We're fast approaching 125, which will probably end up being an AllCon episode. All that being said, don't forget to buy, collect, and enjoy your comics. Go find...
And go to comic conventions.
Go to them and enjoy it and read all of your Superman analog books, because there are some good ones out there, but you will not have any time left in your days if you just read them all. So be careful about what you read, but read as many as you want to. All right, say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. So, I see what you did there. I don't